even if not everybody's here. Okay. I just want to explain one thing before we start. If you all see me enter the temple room and not offer obeisances, that's because I had an operation about 2 days ago, and I'm not supposed to bend down. So if you're wondering why, it's not that I'm against Krishna consciousness or anything. You know, because people see that. So I'm not supposed to bend down or do anything like that for about a week or two or three. But I'm all right, as you can see. I'm still alive. Okay. So, Om Ganatimadandasha Gananjana Shilakya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So we want to start off just reading a few more quotes from Prabhupada about compassion, about empathy. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, second chapter, text 27. On the planet of Satyaloka there is neither bereavement, nor old age, nor death. There is no pain of any kind, and therefore there are no anxieties. Save that sometimes, due to consciousness, there is a feeling of compassion for those unaware of the process of devotional service, who are subjected to unsurpassable miseries in the material world. So that's the demigods or those who are in Satyaloka. Aribol. Next quote is from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, ninth chapter, text 7. A pure devotee of the Lord like Brahma and persons in his disciplic succession are always unhappy to see the perplexities of the conditioned souls who are suffering the onslaughts of the threefold miseries which pertain to the body and mind, to the disturbances of material nature, and to many other material disadvantages. Just another quote from the middle of the Prabhupada's purport on Srimad Bhagavatam 3.21.31. The perfection of one's energy can be utilized for real self-interest if one is compassionate. He is not satisfied that only he himself is a devotee, but tries to distribute the knowledge of devotional service to everyone. So, Jai Srila Prabhupada. So, several comments I wanted to make about compassion. First of all, we mentioned that people have different needs, material needs, spiritual needs, etc. There's a whole hierarchy of needs, and the chart is falling off the door, so you can't see it. But the pure devotee is concerned with people suffering in the material world, even if it doesn't happen to do specifically with a spiritual need. I'll give an example of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and many of you heard this story. Srila Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and Srila Prabhupada was observing that the children in Mayapur, who were born in Mayapur, not our ISKCON devotees, but some other children, they were fighting with the dogs for the leaf plates that the devotees had left over after they had eaten. In other words, when you throw away the leaf plates in India, the dogs and the pigs and the other animals come out and they try to get whatever they can because they're hungry. They have a need for food. And the children were fighting with these dogs in order to get something to eat. So Prabhupada started crying. And at that point he said, no one should be hungry within something like 10 miles, I forget the exact amount of miles, 10 miles. Of our ISKCON temple, and he started, that's where ISKCON food relief started at that particular point. So that's very important to understand. The Prabhupada was concerned with their having food. In other places, Prabhupada said that unless someone has sufficient food, how are they going to take up Krishna consciousness? So that applies for all of us. We need to have our basic needs satisfied, fulfilled, so we can be enthusiastic and persevere in Krishna consciousness. Another point I wanted to make was about, which is similar to what I started the whole seminar with, was that how in devotional service sometimes we do things ritualistically. And when we do things ritualistically without our connection, without understanding why we're doing what we're doing or thinking devotionally about Krishna, we put ourselves on automatic in devotional service. In other words, I remember one devotee saying jokingly, "Wake me up when my job is done." You know, just chanting, "Wake me up when my job is done." And unfortunately, this is a natural occurrence or an unnatural occurrence that we are subject to year after year in the Krishna conscious movement, because we are doing the same thing all the time. You know, it's the same Mangal Arati, the same incense, the same bell, the same this. And Prabhupada said, variety is the mother of enjoyment. So what do you do when you're doing the same thing every day? You tend to put yourself on automatic, right? And you don't notice. I mean, you'll even say the prayers during Mangal Arati, and you won't notice that you actually said the prayers. One time you'll be thinking, did I say the prayers? Did I go to Mangal Arati this morning? I'll tell you what happened to me. This is very embarrassing, but I'll tell you anyway. One day I was serving my deities. I have deities Giriraj, Govardhan Shilas. I was serving them and making some preparation for them. And so I really was thinking of something else. Probably I was thinking about what I was going to eat. Anyway, hopefully not. I was thinking of something else. So I was serving them, and then I got down and said the offering prayers to the deities. Very interesting. And then after I said the offering prayers and I got up, I noticed I hadn't put the plates on the altar. So I had just offered air to the deities. You know, we should be honest. If something like that happens, that means Krishna is giving us the message. We have to be more attentive. I'll give you one material example, not of myself, of people who are inattentive. Once upon a time, there were two airplane pilots, and they were flying an airplane, obviously, a commercial airplane. And they were flying to some other city. I don't remember what city it was. And they put the plane on automatic pilot. You may have read this story. So while they had the plane on automatic pilot, they were just talking to each other and having a nice conversation, probably about the football game or whatever. And the plane went 200 miles past the airport that they were supposed to land at. And at the same time, the government was so concerned that they sent up some fighter jets because they thought the plane had been hijacked. So these pilots, you know, they look out the window and they see the fighter jets like ready to shoot them down. And they think, uh-oh, we made a mistake. And so they turned back and landed at the right airport. However, they lost their jobs. So we don't want that to happen to us in Krishna consciousness. So let's get on. We're talking about the blocks of communication, right? So this morning we talked about diagnosis. Let's see. Oh, I'm actually on the wrong page here. Diagnosis and denial of responsibility. Everybody remembers? We'll just review it a little. Diagnosis is to give someone a label. Someone, it can be a racist label, it could be just a label like they're stupid or good or bad, and then you don't really connect with the person. The second one we talk about is denial of responsibility. Like, I do this because I was told to do it. It's not my fault, it's not my responsibility, it's the responsibility of the temple president or the person who told me to do it. That's the second disconnection. The third one we're going to go through is called demands. And we actually touched upon this morning about what a demand is. A demand is the opposite of a request. A request is basically, would you be willing to do something? A demand is you have to do something. But it's not really the language that you use, it's the intention. For example, if I ask you, would you be willing to cook for me? and you say no, and I get angry, it's a demand. So the way you can tell the difference between a demand and a request is by the person's response if you don't do it, or your response if the other person doesn't do it. That's the way. So when we're dealing with people, we should ask them things, and if they don't want to do it, we should be happy, because we don't want someone to do something for us with that mood, with that consciousness that they have to do it. They're resentful. So when you make a demand, there's two options the people can give. One is that they rebel and they say no. The other one is that they do it with the wrong frame of consciousness. So I think we went over some of this already. We gave some of that. Okay. So let's do a little exercise. Take some time. We'll give you a minute. That's a lot of time. When you remember giving something to someone when it wasn't a demand, in other words, maybe they didn't even ask for it, how did you feel doing that? And I'd like to give you a minute, think about it, and ask for some volunteers to actually tell us how they felt doing something, volunteering for someone, when they knew the other person wanted it, but they weren't demanding it. Does everyone understand the exercise? You understand? You got something? Okay, so here it is. Someone needs something, whether they asked or not, and you just did it voluntarily from your heart, and they were happy with what you did. Okay? They weren't demanding it, but they either requested it, you know, if you're willing to do this, or you did it without them even asking. Does anyone? Okay, yes. Microphone, where's our microphone runners? Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is only incident.
Give me the incident.
So Mataji was running with her child for like to go to some event something from the dance class something. So I was accidentally there repairing my car, where my insurance agent came and he was repairing my flat car. Yeah. So there I had my car which I drove there. Okay, so that Mataji was running. I asked her what happened. So she had to go to that place, which is like half a mile to 1 mile above. So I offered to take that car. So she was really happy, and again she returned back after a day or so. Yeah.
She thanked you for it, right?
Yeah, she is more thankful.
How did you feel?
I felt like it is all Krishna's arrangement.
Well, that's in your mind, but how did you feel? What? See, that's what I meant. We're really philosophical.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all Krishna's arrangement. But, feeling. Simple feeling. We need a feeling to get happy, sad, fulfilled.
I was an instrumental to help the helper. Yeah.
That's in your mind, too. You see. This is good. I mean, it's good he's saying these things, because it shows us that generally we go to our mind.
Yeah.
I felt. Felt is from the heart.
It was good.
Good. Good is really vague. Did you feel happy?
Yeah, it was happy.
Okay. Good. So we're learning from these exchanges how difficult it is to actually express our feelings, because it makes us vulnerable. Vulnerable means that maybe people may attack us if someone expresses their feelings. So it's good. So it's good to be able to express your feelings, because that's how you connect with someone. Yes. And I thank you for expressing your feeling. Okay, who else wants to give us? Yes, microphone.
Mm-hmm. They only give my experience when people actually accepting or when they don't.
Just give your experience where you did something for someone and you knew they weren't demanding it.
I was demanding.
I was not. Okay. You did something for someone else voluntarily, just out of the goodness of your heart.
Yeah, at my work I distribute prasadam. I give cookies to people at work. Mm-hmm. And they do accept it. It seems like it's I'm doing it just to distribute prasadam, not to get something out of it.
And how did you feel?
Satisfied.
Good, yeah. Good. Very good. Yes. Back there.
Hare Krishna. Just reminded me because before coming to Philadelphia, we were in New Mexico, Los Alamos. It's a very small town, and we didn't have any temple in New Mexico. So our house, my husband would go to grocery store in the evening, and if he'll see any Indian, he would just bring them home. You know, any Indian new person he'll see, he'll bring them home. And I'm done cooking, prasadam is all, enjoyed. And then I have to cook because they are come. But it was a small seva that we did, but it just impacted their life. I meet them after 20 years, they still remember the taste of that food that they had.
Wow, that's powerful. Thank you. See, that connection, when you do something without being asked, I mean, I'll give you an example of how someone just did something for me without being asked. Because usually I do demand things of people. That's my business. You're supposed to serve me, you're supposed to do this. So, as I mentioned before, I recently had an operation. And this person from our congregation came and stayed with me the whole time. I didn't ask him. He just stayed with me the whole time, not in the operating room, obviously, but in the pre-op and in the recovery. And I was just overwhelmed. And just, you know, we now, he and I, have a really solid connection. I'll never forget that. That's interesting also as far as devotees helping people who are in need. When you do that, we have this whole initiative called Vaishnava Care. Anyone's heard about that before? Vaishnava Care. In Philadelphia, I think you have that, and other places in North Carolina where I generally am. And you just reach out to people who are in need, and that brings people deeper into Krishna consciousness. It's very powerful. I mean, even many other religions, they have like programs to visit people in the hospitals. And one time, one of my disciples was in the hospital. Nobody visited her except for some Christian people. Guess what? Can anyone guess? She became a Christian. Because her need for compassion and love was there. And it wasn't being fulfilled in the devotee community. So it is our business to fulfill, to, from our hearts, attempt to fulfill the needs of other devotees in some way or other. And then we'll have a very tight community. As Prabhupada says, you know, Dadati Pratigranati Guyamakyati Prichati, commenting on this, he said, this is how the Krishna consciousness movement expands, by these loving exchanges. If we can engage in these loving exchanges, connection with each other, nobody's going to want to leave Krishna consciousness. It'll be, you know, you just keep everybody there. I mean, just like Bhakti Siddhanta, this is an interesting story. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he actually said how you keep a servant. Many of you heard this story before. He said you have to feed a servant rice with ghee on it, called balam rice with ghee on it, and then the servant will never forget you. So in other words, it's not that we feed everybody rice with ghee. Of course, that's good. One of the reasons I joined the Krishna consciousness movement is because everything was cooked in ghee when I joined. Now it's become like oil. Everything's oil, fire sacrifices with oil, everything is oil. But in the old days, you know, they cook with ghee. Anyway, so that satisfied a lot of people's needs and they joined the Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada said it's kitchen religion. And he was dealing with people's needs for tasty food. I mean, you all wouldn't be here today unless there was also prasadam provided, right? If they made an announcement, there'll be no prasadam at this festival at all. Who's going to come? No one. Except for me. So, okay. So that's the third D of disconnection. And the fourth one is called deserve. And that disconnects us in many different ways. One way is that if someone does something that we don't like, we think they deserve to be punished or to suffer. Isn't it like if you're a little child, not little, you know, whatever, a child does that. Let's say if a child pulls your computer off of the shelf and it smashes, God forbid. Then you probably want to spank him. He deserves to suffer because of what he's done to me. So that disconnects you, not only from the child, but it disconnects you from your own needs. And it's not an effective means of correcting someone's behavior. If we want to correct someone's behavior, instead of retribution, we need to it's called restorative, and understand and help them understand how to correct their behavior, not to punish them. In justice, in the systems of justice, when someone does something wrong, there are two philosophies. One is the philosophy of restorative justice, and the other philosophy is this philosophy of retributive justice. And generally, most people want retributive justice. Let's say if someone does something wrong, they put them in prison to make them suffer. But really what we should be hankering for is to restore them to their normal frame of consciousness. For example, let's say someone has done all these bad karmic things. You know, eating meat, everything like that. And we know the Yamadutas are there, right? But isn't it better just to get them to chant Hare Krishna and become a devotee rather than be subject to the Yamadutas? Because that's our compassion. So we're interested in restoring them, not just subjecting them to punishment. And even the punishment of the Yamadutas is specifically geared to help them understand what they did wrong. It's not just to punish them for punishment's sake. For example, if someone mistreats a devotee on Sankirtan, guess what happens? He gets put through a sugar cane press. Fifth canto of Bhagavatam. So he won't. That's from the fifth canto. I'm not making that up. Or if someone is very romantic, guess what he gets to do? Does anyone know? He has to embrace a white hot or red hot form of the opposite sex, you know, and burn. So he's not going to be so much interested in that anymore. He'll follow the regulated principles in his next life. So that's restorative. Or for example, like Jad Bhart he was meditating on the deer. On Bhart Maharaj, sorry. Bhart Maharaj was meditating on the deer. He became a deer. He learned his lesson. That's restorative. So we're not interested in simply getting people to suffer because of what they did wrong. We're interested in restoring them to the right frame of consciousness. So these are the four blocks of communication we just mentioned. So, do we have any good actors here? We want to do a little exercise. Anyone volunteer? Two people volunteer? Okay. Okay, so we're going to demonstrate these four blocks of discommunication. Now remember, the first one is diagnosis. Okay, microphone. You give someone a label, like bad, good, stupid, ugly, or And you see how it interferes with the communication. Can you do that, or?
We're supposed to give each other a label.
No, one of you give her a label.
I give her a label.
You give her a label. But what label do you want to give her? Think of a good one.
Please give me what I need.
Immature.
Okay. Immature in what way?
Not knowing right from wrong.
You are a nonsense. You're a rascal. You should do this, not that. What do you think you're doing?
Do you know what you're doing?
Yes, I do. Do you?
Well, if you're talking to me, you don't.
Okay, that's good. Very good. All right. Okay, the next one, two men I'm going to need, denial of responsibility. Two volunteers, men? None of the men want to volunteer, they're all shy. One more. Okay. I'll give you this one. You have a drinking problem. And we're not talking about, you know, nectar drink or anything like that. You know, you get drunk a lot and everything like that, and he's trying to help you. But you're going to deny, you understand, denial of responsibility?
Yeah.
You're not going to say, oh, it's my fault or anything like that.
Yeah.
You just put it off on something else. Like,
okay.
You know, things like I drink because my wife is nasty to me.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons for drinking.
So, Prabhu,
he's trying to preach you. Tell him not to drink anymore.
My friend, you crashed the car, you lost all your money, your wife is upset. She sent me a text message telling me what you've done. You need to stop drinking.
Well, I know I should do that, but I feel so frustrated that I don't know what to do. I got to drink. And all men in my age, when they come and they face something, they do that.
Good, learning something new here.
I don't do that. You don't have to do that.
Well, yeah.
Why do you drink? You don't need it.
I know you're right. I shouldn't drink. But every time, you know, that day I thought I shouldn't drink, but when I was going by the bar, I just really, really felt that I can't go ahead without having a drink. I agree, I shouldn't do that, but it's very difficult for me.
Okay, very good. Haribol, you know what? Did you notice one word he kept using? It's called but. Yeah, but. You know, whenever you use the word but, it actually negates everything you said before. You know, like if your children say, could you take us to the beach, Dad? You say, I'd like to do that, but. In other words, you don't like to do that. Okay, and let's see. Okay, let's do the final one. Because we didn't do demands. Okay, let's do demands. More volunteers? Volunteers. Yeah. So here you're going to ask her to do something. You're going to ask her to do something, and if she doesn't do it, there's going to be a negative response from you.
I have to ask her?
Yeah, ask her to do something.
Ivy, can you go wash the pots?
Yeah, that's fine. You wash the pots.
No, I can't. My skin is very sensitive, and my hands will, on my skin will break out in a rash. I can't do hand wash dishes. I'm sorry.
But I asked you to go do the pots.
But my skin is too sensitive. You need to wash them yourself.
Like, I'm your mother or something like
sorry?
That. You tell her, I'm your mother. You're supposed to do what I say.
I'm your mother. Do what I say.
Well, you helped make the dishes. You can help wash them.
Okay, very good.
Any more questions?
Okay, now I'm going to do one thing. I'm going to be part of this one. We're going to do one thing to illustrate how people feel when you're demanding something and there's a differential in position or a differential in age or a differential in strength. So, I need someone to act like a child. This should be a man because it's going to be very abusive. Okay. Get down, kid. On your knees, yeah.
All right.
So, this is how a child experiences the parents. So, he's a kid, and I'm the parent.
Wow.
This is the differential.
Sure.
Try to understand how he's going to feel. Go to your room.
Why should I?
I said, go to your room.
But why should I?
Because I'm your father.
So?
All right.
Okay.
I'm taking away your iPhone.
I have an Android phone.
Take it away your Android phone then.
But why? I didn't do anything wrong.
Because you didn't listen to me.
Why? That you asked me to go to my room and I didn't
yeah.
listen to you? But I just asked you why.
Because I said so.
You say a lot of things, Dad.
That's good. Can I ask if you responded to your father that way when he was young?
Because he has this friend kind of relationship, so he fell in romance.
That's an unusual childhood, I can tell you that. So, how did you feel when someone's towering over you like that? Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't know the reason, it's frustrating.
So that's how someone feels when there's a differential like that. You know, you're the one low man or low person or low lady on the totem pole, and there you just feel like disempowered, scared, or you may rebel, but then you've lost your job. What if you do that at the workplace? You've lost your... You what? You'll be at home. Very dangerous. So we should understand when we demand someone from someone, that's how they feel. And they may choose to rebel, but it doesn't accomplish our purpose in encouraging them to do something. Or they may decide to submit, in which case they're submitting in the wrong mood. Okay? And let's see, where are we? The last one is deserve. Okay? I should do that again with someone else. You ready? Someone who has had a regular childhood. Any normal people here? Or? Okay, why don't you come up? So, let's believe you're a disciple.
I'm playing your disciple,
Mark. Yeah, you're playing, make believe. I mean, most of my disciples are make believe anyway, so I'm used to it. So, are you chanting your rounds?
Not really, Maharaj.
You deserve to be punished. You deserve, don't you understand about the Yamadutas, what they're going to do to you?
I have the fear, Maharaj, but I would like to express my difficulty to you to see if you could understand.
No, you have to understand. You're going to be punished. We'll send you to the pot washing room right now.
Maharaj, you mentioned in the morning that you were treated the same way by a sannyasi, but you're treating me like the same way.
Very good. Okay. You keep on. Okay, so that's the first response I got like that. So the main thing is that if we learn to avoid these blocks of communication, then we can have a society where we have loving relationships, understanding each other. Otherwise, we're like a dead society. Very important. So these are the blocks of communication. We're just going quickly through this. And now we're going to talk about the tools to communicate. This gets a little technical. And there's several tools. The first one is observation. I'll go through them quickly, and then we'll have some training in each one. First one is observation. The next one is called feelings, or understanding feelings. The next one is called needs. When we're dealing with other people, needs. And the last one is called requests. Okay. So let's start with observations. Most of us have difficulty making observations, because an observation is just the facts. In other words, what someone did or what you did without any judgment. That's it. Very specific. Just like a detective would say to someone, I don't know if any of you have seen this, just the facts, ma'am. You know, because someone will say, he was angry with me. That's not necessarily a fact. Maybe he wasn't angry with you. Maybe he was thinking something different. What did he do? What did he do specifically? So, there's no judgment in it. So let me give some examples and ask you all whether these examples are observations or their judgments, or something else, or evaluations. The first one is, we'll see how everyone responds to this. John was angry with me yesterday for no reason. Is that an observation or a judgment or what? It's a judgment. Why? Anyone know? Just two things. What? Yeah, so he was angry, and what else? No reason, yeah. So that's two things. Another one was, yesterday evening, Devi Dasi bit her fingernails during class. Observation. Because you didn't say, wow. Jai shishi radadamada radadamada ki jai. Okay. Because you didn't give a reason or what you felt about it. Our next one is Das did not ask for my opinion during the meeting. Observation. These are very easy things. Another one. My father is a good man. Judgment. Everyone's learning quickly. Krishna Das works too much. Judgment. Good. Krishna Das is aggressive. Devi Dasi was first in line every day this week. Good. Another one. Das doesn't often brush his teeth. It's not specific. Ninth, Das told me that I don't look good in yellow. Observation. And 10, the temple president complains when I talk to him. Everyone sure? Yes, you're right. Because complains is one thing, and it's not specific. It's not of a time, place, and circumstance. So, can any of you think about when a person behaved in a way that didn't meet your needs, and tell me what he did or she did as an observation? You don't have to mention their names. In other words, you got upset, you were angry. What did someone specifically do that stimulated you in that way? Yeah, back there.
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Hare Bol.
I was in the prasadam line. I'm probably a year new to the Krishna movement, and I was getting prasadam out with the serving spoon, and I tapped my porcelain plate with it. I don't know if I was trying to get off of the spoon or whatever, and somebody said, "Prabhu, you don't touch a plate with the spoon." And I was kind of under stress at that time, and it was like, if I had come through the door and somebody went pow like that, it just hit me like that. And I was just like, I shouldn't have, but I just took the plate, put the food over here, and I walked out. And I was like so upset.
Right, and what need of yours, without blaming the other person, was not satisfied?
Say it one more time.
What need... Why? In other words, why did you feel like that?
I want to learn, but not with someone, you know, just shouting at me.
So you had a need for understanding, a need for compassion, or a need for patience?
Probably compassion.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah, compassion. First, it scared me, and second, it's just like, you know, couldn't you have told me in a nicer way than that? You know,
so that's empathic. Yeah. How would someone? Can anyone volunteer? How would you say it empathically?
Prabhu.
Yeah.
This was the most interesting experience because this could be some of my karma. You know, trying to alleviate triggers or something like that. It was so interesting. 2 hours later, one of the priest's wives was there, and a little boy did identical the same thing. It was like me watching a movie, you know. And she came over, she said, "Prabhu, we don't touch the plates with the serving spoons." And I'm like, wow, what a contrast.
So he gave two observations here. That was very good.
I still kind of blame myself because I think, you know, because I have this problem, I'm probably bringing this lesson to myself to try to overcome or to show me something.
But if you look at it empathically from your standpoint, to be empathic with yourself is very important. Like, why did you respond or feel the way you did? Because you had a need for being dealt with in a compassionate way.
Yeah.
That was your basic need. And so obviously you weren't dealt with in a compassionate way, and that need wasn't met. So you're taking responsibility for that. I have a need to be dealt with in a compassionate way. And if you wanted to make a change in the person who did that, then you would explain your need. Would you be willing we're demonstrating this. Would you be willing, next time you yell at me, next time I do something that's not in tune with the devotional standard, just to tell it to me, you know, in a little softer tone of voice. So that's a request. I appreciate your correction, but would you be willing like that? Thank you. That's good. Does anyone have any other ones? Yes. Yes. Microphone. Just an observation. Yeah.
I have an example where the person dealt with me emphatically, and it made me feel very good. Because there's a person at our ashram that takes care of the cows. He does it all the time. He works really hard. And we're friends. And so we're standing by a water faucet, and we're filling up a 5-gallon bucket. And it takes quite a while. We're standing there. And I realized my hand felt sticky, so I just stuck it under the water, right? Mm-hmm. Going into the bucket for the cows. And he says, oh, no, now I have to empty it out and fill it up again. He said, the cows won't drink it. He said, for some reason, they don't like to drink it after the touches a person's hand at all. That was a nice way of saying it. And later on, I realized that probably that was considered water for the cows. Nobody should contaminate it. But he didn't say it that way. He said, oh, the cows, I can dump it out and start over. Cows won't drink it. I thought that was very nice.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So there was an observation. He said this in such a way, you know, practical observation. And your response was that it met your need for compassion and proper communication like that. Good.
Yeah.
Good. Very nice. Just one more person on this. Anyone else? For an observation. How something someone said or did something that either met your needs or didn't meet your needs, and exactly what they did. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
How'd it go?
Once I was visiting one of these corn temples with my cousin, and after Aarti, there was a class, and we really didn't know much about philosophy, so we didn't like it that much. So we just went out and we were talking, catching up on some things. So one Prabhuji, he came to us and he like blasted on us, saying that...
Blasted?
Yeah. Like,
No, let me try to work with you on this, if that's all right.
Sure, yeah, I mean...
What did he exactly say?
Yeah, so he was like, what are you guys doing here? You shouldn't be talking about materialistic stuff sitting here in the temple. You should be going inside and like listening to the class. So that was like his response, and yeah.
All right, so that's an observation, but he added a judgment in there too, right? He blasted them.
Probably
so an observation.
Probably he heard us talking.
No, an observation would be he said this, 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 and this. And blasting is sort of a judgment on the whole thing. Now, you could, if you said he spoke in 120 decibels to us, that's an observation. But blasting is sort of a judgment. So it's important to learn how to observe things. And then, how did you feel after he said that?
I felt that my, like I was not understood, or maybe I was not told in a kind way.
How did you feel? Not feeling. See how difficult it is to go to the feeling.
I feel really bad.
Very bad.
Yeah.
Can be more specific. That's a vague thing.
I felt I don't know. I mean, I just felt bad, and probably we left actually.
Pain.
Yeah, pain. Pain. Yes.
So you felt pain.
Yeah.
Sad, pain. Disturbed.
Disturbed.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So the next thing we just illustrated. The next thing is feelings. Okay. So what we're going to do right now is do an exercise. Feelings means, as we explained before, right from the heart. So I'm going to ask some of you to volunteer and tell me how you feel right now, this instant, and be honest. Wait, what'd you say? That's a feeling. I feel hot. You feel what? Peaceful, that's a feeling. Let's have another feeling. Tired, because you just ate ice cream. Yeah. Yeah. What'd you say? Thoughtful. That's good. Other feelings? Relaxed. Yes. What's that? Lighthearted. Very good. Huh? I mean, nostalgic. Yeah, okay. Tired. He's ready to go to sleep. Yes. It's fortunate. Fortunate is sort of a judgment. It has to, that's something from the head. Remember, to connect, we're trying to go right from the heart. So feeling, we have to develop a feeling vocabulary. Not just happy or sad, but enlightened, ecstatic. Of course, that word is used too much by devotees. That was ecstatic prasadam, that was ecstatic kirtan, that was ecstatic class, that was ecstatic. I love your sari, that's ecstatic. So, that word has lost its use. Okay. So here we're going to go through feelings and statements, and you're going to tell me if they are feelings or judgments. Right? Here's a good one for a sannyasi. I feel that you don't love me. Judgment. I am sad that you are leaving. Feeling. I feel scared when you say that. Feeling. When you don't greet me, I feel neglected. Judgment. Neglected. That means you are neglecting me. I am happy that you can come. Feeling. You are disgusting. I feel like hitting you. Judgment. I feel misunderstood. Very good. I feel good about what you did for me. Good is that. It's vague, but still it's a feeling. I am worthless. Okay. And, okay. So then we finish with feelings. The third component is called needs. Remember we mentioned in the beginning that everything we do, everything we think, every action we take is based on fulfilling a need that should be fulfilled. So every thought we have. So we have that whole list of needs, which is no longer there, unfortunately. And okay, so let's ask everybody, what, we go around the room and ask for volunteers, what is the most important need that you have in life? Remember that there's basic needs, like food, water, light, air, then you get higher, like freedom, interdependence, love, recreation, fun. And finally, you arrive at the top to self-realization or Krishna consciousness. So, be honest. I mean, everybody, of course, you're all devotees, you're all, that's a designation. You're all going to say, my need is to be Krishna conscious. I mean, the problem is, let me read you something from, from Maslow. This is a very interesting statement. When we're not aware or in denial of our needs, or repress or suppress our needs. Here's an interesting quote. This is from Abraham Maslow's Psychology of Being. A kind of pseudo-growth, and he's referring to religious institutions, Pseudo means false. Growth takes place commonly when a person tries, by repression, denial, reaction formation, to convince himself that an ungratified basic need has been gratified or doesn't exist. That means suppression or repression. Let me explain the difference between the two. Suppression is when you keep something down. You're really hungry, but you're just fighting it. Repression means when you're in denial that you have a particular need. You know, a need for, let's say, recreation. A need for fresh air. A need for sunshine. I mean, let me give you an example of people in... I have one friend who lives in Germany. A disciple who lives in Germany. And he has a need for sunshine. And so what happens in the middle of the winter... Unless he takes a vacation, he gets very depressed. So he goes every once in a while to Spain. So if he was in denial of that need, he would be depressed. So Maslow says, you convince yourself that an ungratified, that means a need that hasn't been satisfied, has been gratified, doesn't exist. He then permits himself to go on to higher level needs, which of course forever rest on a very shaky foundation. I call this pseudo-growth by bypassing the ungratified need. Such a need continues forever as an unconscious force, repetition, and compulsion. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Like if we have some basic need, many of us think that we're on a higher level of Krishna consciousness than we're actually at. Am I wrong? Right? We think, you know, many of us think that we're gopis. You know, advanced. I joined the Hare Krishna movement. When I joined, we read Krishna book, which is nice. Nothing wrong with Krishna book. So, first week after I joined, myself and the other brahmacharis looked at each other after reading Krishna book, and we thought, oh, we must all be coward boys. We hadn't gotten to the rasa dance yet. We just got to the coward boy platform, so we thought, oh, we must be coward boys. Yeah, that's my eternal Ras. And I hadn't even gotten initiated, and I was a coward boy already. You have to speak of controlling my senses, what to speak of anything. So we generally like to think of ourselves as being more advanced than we actually are. And it's important to understand the needs that are important to us at a particular time. Like if we're too tired, if you're hungry, you're thirsty or something like that, then be aware of it. So I want to go around the room and ask you all, nice devotees and demons, and aspiring devotees and whatever, I want to ask you, like, what need is important to you right now? Okay, anybody want to volunteer? Yes?
I need to love and be loved.
Very important. Very good, honest. That's vulnerable. You understand? Someone says that. Ladies are more apt to do that. The men, they're just, we don't have emotions. We don't have a need for understanding. I'm tough and rough until they explode. Because the problem with suppressing or repressing needs is like a balloon. When you squeeze one part of a balloon, anybody seen people make balloon puppets and things like that? You squeeze one part of a balloon, the other part pops out. That's called, in technical terms, it's called sublimation. You know, you sublimate some desire. It means it comes out some other way. Yet I'm hungry, so I get angry. So that's honest. And that is a very important need. And one of the reasons I joined Krishna consciousness was because I felt loved by Prabhupada. You know, when Prabhupada walked into the room first time, 1971, Gainesville, Florida, I could feel here was someone who loved me in an unconditional way. I mean, we all need that love, isn't it? We're not talking about conditional love. Conditional love means I love you if you get good grades in school. Right? I mean, that's the message that kids sometimes get from their mothers. I mean, I got that message. My mother loves me. But I got that message from my mother when she said, when I got anything less than a B, that my son could not get any less than a B. This is not the report card of my son. So how did I hear it? You know, I'm not her son because I didn't live up to her expectation. There's a demand again. You know, we're connecting all these different things. So unconditional love is something we all need. So I felt that from Prabhupada. Here's someone who loves me and he's here just to give me Krishna consciousness, and he's gone across the ocean. I mean, you could feel in Prabhupada's presence. It wasn't simply an intellectual thing. You could feel in Prabhupada's presence, and then I just said, I surrender to him. Just because of that need for love. Pretty nice, isn't it? So we all have that. That's a very important need for all of us. And who else has a need they want to share? Yeah. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. You have a need for clarification. Okay.
Thank you. And the question is when we were going through all those statements of whether it's an observation or it's judgment.
Yeah.
The question is, when I say that I'm feeling cold, how is it different from saying that I'm feeling neglected?
Neglected is putting it on someone else because someone else is neglecting you. See that you're projecting that on someone else. Now, if you were to say it is cold, that's a judgment. You understand? Because I may be feeling it's really warm, and if you're an Eskimo, you know what an Eskimo is. You may feel it's boiling hot in here. So, but I'm feeling cold. That's a feeling, but I feel neglected. That means I'm judging that person is neglecting me. It's a judgment. Does that make sense?
It is making sense. I mean, I can understand, but just as I can.
What they say is, you never put your butt in someone else's face. So, all right. Go ahead.
Thank you. So, just as I know that I'm feeling cold,
yeah.
Similarly, I can feel that I'm being neglected.
Well, you're making the judgments in the brain. You're feeling that you're thinking you're being neglected, and you feel sad because of it. You feel depressed because of it. You feel lonely because of it. I don't know what other feelings. That would have to come from you. Mm-hmm. But the feeling is from the heart. It's really important. It's a challenge for all of us to go to the heart. That's perhaps the biggest challenge. Because we're so used to the brain, especially being a very philosophical movement. We are. I mean, we have the best philosophy in the world. Fantastic. We can defeat anybody.
Is that a judgment or an
observation? That's an observation. That's true. It's a judgment. But it's... That Prabhupada said it, so... I won't say that. Like, I was listening to Srila Prabhupada walking down the beach with Mr. Patel. You know, he had these famous conversations with Mr. Patel on the beach. And Mr. Patel was presenting some Mayavad philosophy, and Prabhupada said, well, just shut him up like that, and just was smashing him. And Prabhupada said, I am powerful. He made that sense because Krishna was behind him. So, yeah, we do have the best philosophy. So... So there's an inclination just to be judging everything and analyzing everything and putting everything in the pigeonholes, and it really disconnects us from our feelings. And it's a struggle that we've all gone through. You know, I've gone through too, because as a brahmachari being trained up, you know, we had all these different judgments that we were subjected to. You know, especially as a brahmachari, you're subjected to all these judgments about women. Of course, none of you are brahmacharis. Any brahmacharis here? Yeah, we have brahmachari here. So unfortunately, I mean, I had to deal with that throughout the years, and then now sort of we're maturing a little bit in Krishna consciousness. So anybody else would like to speak about what they need right now? Right now at this minute, yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Yes. Oh. Honestly speaking, right now I feel sleepy, I need to sleep.
You feel what?
Sleep.
Sleepy, that's honest. That's what I said, right after eating ice cream, people are going to feel sleepy.
Okay. Maharaj, I'm feeling slightly intimidated by this seminar because of recognizing opportunity for growth for myself, which requires vulnerability, and therefore I'm feeling a need for shelter because it means that I'll have to become more vulnerable in my life.
Yeah, need for protection like that. Very good. That's very good. So I think we only have 3 minutes left for this afternoon session. So anybody have any quick questions about any of the topics? There's more to the process. We have to go on. Let me explain what's going to happen tomorrow. We're going to go on to the requests, and then we have a lot of things like that. How to take care of anger, emotional freedom, how to say no. That's a good one. How to get someone to stop talking. Wow. Expressing and receiving gratitude and appreciation. Once we go through this chapter, which we're going to finish up tomorrow. Yeah, there's a question.
Yes, Hare Krishna. Okay. So I'm wondering if you will agree that if someone says, I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
if someone says that they're feeling neglected, that indeed it is a feeling, however, it is one based on a judgment.
Yeah. Well, let's use feeling language. It's definitely, they may be neglected, but they're feeling they have a need for care or something like that. Let's put it in a different language so it doesn't point the finger. The main thing I'm trying to do is so you're not making a judgment on someone else. Because whenever I say that I'm feeling neglected, it probably means that he's doing something, it's his responsibility, he's the one, I'm not taking responsibility for my feelings and needs. Because the important part of this process is to take responsibility for your own feelings. And take responsibility ultimately for fulfilling your own needs, not to demand, we're just tying it all together, not to demand that someone else has that responsibility. Like for example, when people get married, first 6 months is great. Tell me if I'm wrong. But then there's the hidden understanding that your business is to fulfill my needs and my business is to fulfill your needs. It's called codependency, psychologically. And it's really not a pleasant thing that, you know, let's say the husband, he has a need for sport, for physical activity. He's doing some physical activity. And the wife is not doing that. You know, he's not going with him to play cricket. For example, so it's his responsibility to find some guys to play cricket with. But you know, this whole idea of love and love and love, you know, sannyasi shouldn't talk like this, is that, you know, you're there for me and I'm there for you. That works with Krishna. You know, Krishna is fulfilling nitya nityanam chaitanya chaitanam eko bahonam yavadarati kama. Krishna is fulfilling the needs of all the living entities since time immemorial. But if we're just putting that demand on our partner, you know, in a husband-wife situation, it's really heavy. You know, someone's thinking that your business will fill all my needs. And you get this sometimes in the guru-disciple relationship, too, that the disciple saying, guru has to fulfill all my emotional and financial needs. And the poor guru has to get a job. I mean, it's... You know, one of my disciples is here, and I'm always jokingly asking her husband to find me a job selling financing for cars, you know. Because people have all these needs. So it's like very burdensome when someone's dumping their needs on you. After a while, you start to get resentful and angry. So that disturbs a lot of marital relationships. You know, that's feeling the other person's there to fulfill all my needs. So we have to seek out our own strategies for fulfilling needs, and now we need to end. If that's all right. So thank you very much. We'll see everybody tomorrow. All glorious and should have qualified.